Welcome to WISO Weekend, your weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Coming up on today's program, Clark County Community Voices producer Renee Wild reports on how a drug overdose can leave behind lasting mental and physical scars. We've also got music from singer-songwriter Maya Caballero. And later in the program, Bill Felker has Poor Will's Almanac. Up first, Jerry Gelati, iconic owner of Jilly's Jazz Club in downtown Dayton, died on Thanksgiving Day. Community Voices producer Dave Barber reflects on Gelati's musical legacy.
Imagine our good fortune, seeing and hearing the greatest musicians on the planet in an intimate atmosphere for a half century. Jilly's, the club Jerry Gelati created, became a place where audiences from every corner of the community could feel comfortable enjoying music together. My Jilly's memories, like experiences you may have had, are vivid and personal. I was lucky to be invited by WYSO to speak with Jerry for the StoryCorps Oral History Project. Here's an edited version of that interview, which originally aired in May of 2015. When did you first get the bug for music or develop this love which turned into a profession?
Well, I was in the Army in 1956 to 58, and I was stationed in Germany. And I got hung up listening to a lot of records, going to the PX and buying them. And I was kind of hooked on people like Chris Connor and Stan Kenton and some of that, and it just kind of Gloria Lynn, and then it kind of evolved. And then I would go on weekend leave, a three-day pass, and I'd go to Frankfurt, Germany, and I found this little club called the Domicile du Jazz Club. It was in an alley, and it was in a basement. It looked like a bomb shelter in there. And I saw the Modern Jazz Quartet in there, and that's kind of how it started.
So when you got back from service and you came back into Dayton, at that point, you started thinking about opening up your own place?
I was still in college. I went back to UD and to finish up because I had only gone 1 year before I went in the Army. So I went back to UD, and then at night, about 11 o'clock after I got to studying, I'd go out to the Turf Club and listen to Bernie Edwards play. I used to go there two or three nights a week and listen to that and hang out with people that like jazz, and all of a sudden it just kind of evolved. I always thought if you did it right, you could make money doing it. But I was wrong. You can't make any money doing it.
I've mentioned shows that I'll never forget. Seeing Townes Van Zandt open for John Lee Hooker. Seeing Milt Jackson on a Sunday night with about 50 people with an amazing band. Many people in Dayton have their own memories of a night at Jilly's that truly stands out. I think maybe for blues fans, it's Albert Collins leaving the club with a long guitar cord and boarding an RTA bus. Dave Greer mentioned seeing Teddy Wilson play over on North Main in his bare feet. What about you? What about the shows that you love the most at Jilly's?
There's so many of them, but one was Stephan Grappelli, who was in his 70s and didn't speak very much English. Great jazz violinist, come back, used to play with Django Reinhardt in Paris, and we had Stefan on three different occasions, and he had a manager, and he said that man is a crook. He's a crook. One night, my wife and daughter were down, and Gene Harris was there, and he was telling stories about the three sounds and about Ray Brown, playing with Ray Brown. And it was just terrific. And I told my wife, I said, that's what the fun is, hanging a little bit. You can hang out with and hear all these stories. It's been a lot of fun.
Jerry, I want to thank you for coming in and sitting down with me. Some of the greatest music I've ever heard in my life, I've heard at Jilly's. I thank you, and on behalf of everyone in Dayton, thanks for all the music.
Thank you.
That was WISO Community Voices producer Dave Barber speaking with the late Jerry Gelati in 2014. Gelati was 80 years old. Jilly's will close at the end of this year. You can share your memories of live music at Jilly's on our website, wyso.org. Former Ohio Senate President Bill Harris passed away after months of battling cancer. State House correspondent Joe Ingles takes a look back at Harris and his contributions to the Ohio legislature.
Bill Harris was born in Tennessee and got his college degree in Arizona, but his political career was all Ohio. In 1995, he left his car dealership in Ashland after being easily elected in a heavily Republican district to the Ohio House. The Marine veteran served there until 2000, when former Governor Bob Taft appointed him to fill the Senate seat vacated by former Senator Dick Shafrath, who took an administrative position. Harris was considered a long shot for the race for the Senate presidency in 2005, but he won and served in that job until 2010, when he left due to term limits. Governor Taft said Harris had exceptionally strong leadership qualities.
He was someone that you could always trust. His word was his bond. He was concerned about others, their situation, their feelings. But he was also focused on moving the ball ahead, getting things done.
Taft said one of Harris's biggest accomplishments was shepherding a massive budget reform bill through the legislature in 2005, a bill that included Taft's 21% income tax cut phased in over 5 years.
I believe he had a passion to accomplish that.
Current Senate President Larry Obhoff echoes his praise for Harris's leadership skills.
I think he did a great job as a Senate president, but I also represent the same area that he did. So there's some overlap between his former district and my current one, and I can tell you from personal experience that he was a pillar of the community here and someone that that the people were very proud of, someone that you could look up to, who you always knew was really representing the interests of the people of this area.
I don't really remember him as some remarkable, wonderful human being.
That's Joanne Davidson, the first woman to serve as Ohio House Speaker. She said Harris was genuine and widely respected in the legislature.
I just remember that he was so supportive and so standing by to help you in some of the very difficult decisions we had in the legislature, person that you would look to. And actually lean on a little bit because of the thought process he used in examining the issue on both sides.
The Ohio Republican Party's Blaine Kelly said Harris led a full life in the military, then as a car dealership owner, and after that as a political leader.
You know, he really embodied the American dream. Everyone who knew him knew that he had a kind heart and he was committed to serving his constituents.
As he left the Ohio legislature, Harris called for cooperation.
I encourage all the legislators on both sides of the aisle to talk to one another and work together, along with the new governor, John Kasich, and the new leadership of the Ohio House of Representatives, to move our great state forward. The responsibility is yours, though I will be watching from my farm in Ashland County.
Harris had been battling cancer in recent months. He was 83 years old. Joe Ingles at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
I'm Juliet Frumhold. Join me on a musical journey every Sunday night on Alphorithms. We'll go far out to the edges of space, time, and genre and make it back home before the weekend is over. Come along, Sunday nights from 8 to 11 on Alphorithms on WYSO.
I feel the liftoff. The clock has started. Roger.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper. Just how far can a person push a cookie? Baking doyenne Dory Greenspan takes on that challenge. And time to update your spice cabinet. Put down the oregano and pick up the annatto. Join us. That's The Splendid Table, the show about life's appetites from 8 p.m.
This morning at 11 on your public radio station, 91.3 WYSO.
I'm Jerry Kenny. You're listening to WYSO Weekend on WYSO. Thanks again for joining us. Ohio officials recently announced a plan aimed at making it easier to become a foster parent. There's a growing shortage of foster care placements across the states as a result of the worsening opioid crisis. The epidemic is also making it more difficult to place children removed from unstable homes with family members. As of August, more than 15,000 children were reported in foster care in Ohio, but the state has just 7,200 foster families ready to take them. In Montgomery County, there are roughly 230 foster homes. That's about 25% fewer than just a few years ago. So-called kinship placement is the first option children's services look for when removing a child from an unstable home. But now, multi-generational drug use is making that less of an option, says Jewel Good, Assistant Director for Montgomery County Job and Family Services Children's Division.
So we have parents and grandparents on both sides of families sometimes where you just don't have options for placement because everybody's dabbling in something. We had a case just recently where we had a grandmother who actually overdosed, so she wasn't able to be looked at for a child. Mom had her own addiction issues, just lots and lots of that.
So officials are placing more children outside the family.
That might look like a group home where there could be up to 10 children total living in a group home, or even depending on the child's psychiatric needs, they may need to go into a children's residential treatment center, which can be, you know, as large as the state will license for that. So more than 20, 30, 40 kids oftentimes in a residential setting.
And Good says county foster cases are also becoming more serious. She says families are staying involved with the department longer, and there's an increase in the number of parents whose parental rights are being taken away. That means less options for children.
Hi there.
Hello.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, sir. Are you?
Good. Very well, thank you.
Bill and Mary Dooley's home in Xenia looks like many of the brick ranch-style homes nearby. For more than 30 years, the Dooleys have shared their home with foster children in need. Many of the children's pictures rest on the fireplace mantle and decorate shelves and tables around the room. Mary estimates they've taken in more than 80 children in that time.
Sometimes they stay for a while. One stayed 2 years, and they sent him home, and his mom didn't like him, and she said to the agency, I want him to go back to Mary. They didn't tell me at the time that he had a broken arm and he had a lot of bruises on him. But we kept him for another 2.5 years, and my brother and sister-in-law adopted him. So we still have him.
When the Dooleys fostered their first child, a boy, the agency never even met her husband, Bill, and never required them to get a license. She says the foster care system's rules and regulations have changed, and now so have the children. Many are so-called NAS babies, born dependent on the opioids their mother used.
It's very hard because of all the drugs. We're bringing babies into this world that go through tremendous pain to go through the withdrawal, and it's very hard. And you see their little bodies tremble, and it has lasting effects because all these kids really want, they just want to be loved. They want to be like everybody else and be loved. Yeah. Yeah. You going to talk for us? Uh-huh. Go ahead. You're on microphone now. You can go ahead.
Mary prefers to foster newborns up to the age of three, but says children born to addicted parents often have more needs. As we talk, she sits in a comfortable chair feeding an infant girl. They've had baby Rose for a couple of months now. Rose is the first foster child they've had who was not born dependent on drugs. Still, Mary says Rose won't be going back to her mom, but will eventually be placed with relatives. The need for more foster parents like the Dooleys extends statewide. Because of the growing shortage, Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine says some children are being sent to foster homes outside their own counties or even across the state. DeWine's office has created a new website for potential foster care providers. He has also promised quicker processing for foster parent applications.
For any counties that are sending this in, you know, we'll get them a 24-hour turnaround time. All they have to do is let us know, you know, that's what the purpose is, and we will, you know, put those cases at the head of the line. These need to be priorities. We got to get these foster families moving forward, and we don't want any impediment because of a background check.
Recently, DeWine announced $1 million in grants to child welfare agencies in 10 of the state's counties hardest hit by the opioid crisis. The funds will help pay for additional staffing and resources to help recruit new foster families. And at Bill and Mary Dooley's house in Xenia, Mary continues rocking baby Rose to sleep. Even though they're now in their 70s, Mary and her husband say they'll continue to foster children who need them.
Yeah, we love doing it, and God will let me know. When we're not physically able to care for him, he's going to let me know that it's time to quit.
It's a blessing for us. When we don't have him, the house is so empty, I can't stand it. She can't stand it. She never met a child she didn't love.
She's a sweet baby.
In Springfield, most calls to the city's 911 emergency switchboard are related to an overdose. Some opioid overdose victims will die. Many others will be saved with a fast-acting overdose reversal drug, Narcan. But for some surviving overdose victims, that's not the end of the story. Clark County Community Voices producer Renee Wild reports a drug overdose can leave behind lasting mental and physical scars.
The drug Narcan can seem like magic. Just one shot of the powerful medicine can literally bring an overdose victim back from the dead. But what happens between the time of an opioid overdose and when the Narcan is administered? That all depends on the person's physical health and how long their breathing was stopped. Springfield Fire Chief Nick Heimlich says a drug overdose immediately triggers a powerful series of critical life and death changes in the body.
Vital organs start to shut down, and it's in a desire to preserve oxygen for the brain. So my kidneys stop processing, my liver. All of those organs start to shut down in order to preserve the last amount of oxygen for brain tissue.
When a person is starved of oxygen for even a few minutes, he says a condition called hypoxia sets in.
And now I'm at zero, and I can only live at zero for a very brief window of time and still be able to be brought back out of that arena.
How long?
Well, usually just a couple minutes.
And when an overdose victim is brought back, they're often at risk for other serious health problems. At Springfield Regional Medical Center, Chief Nursing Officer Elaine Storrs says hypoxia can lead to permanent or fatal damage. It can affect major organs such as the lungs, heart, and kidneys. She says a drug overdose can also damage the central nervous system.
People sometimes think that it's just trauma, or physical trauma, but not necessarily. Brain injury can occur from lack of oxygen, and you can have a long-term effect from that.
After an overdose, Storrs says that some of the victims may experience symptoms including tremors, loss of balance and coordination, and the inability to read, write, or communicate. They may suffer memory loss or hearing impairment, and a loss of oxygen can even lead to a permanent vegetative state. There are no hard numbers for what percentage of overdose victims end up suffering lingering after effects. What is clear is that many opioid overdose survivors go into immediate withdrawal, which often pushes them to use again, and as soon as possible. Watching the same people cycle into and out of the emergency room for an overdose can be hard on the doctors and nurses, Storrs says.
There is a second victim in this, and that is the healthcare providers. I mean, it is hard on their psyche to continuously revive people again and again, especially repeat faces. It's very disheartening to them to not be able to fix, because we're fixer personalities. We feel a sense of failure.
With no end in sight to the opioid epidemic, Clark County officials are trying to prevent more overdoses from happening in the first place. And they've launched a program to reach surviving overdose victims with addiction treatment before they've even left the hospital. For WYSO, I'm Renee Wild.
And next week, WYSO will bring you a series of special reports on the opioid epidemic from the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Well, every once in a while, we've got to take a break from all the news and listen to some good music. As you know, WYSO puts out a lot of music over the airwaves, and one of those programs usually does it live with artists performing right here in our studios. Last week, Kaleidoscope host Juliet Fromholtz welcomed her guest, singer-songwriter Maya Caballero. And during that interview, premiered Maya's new single called Hello Sunshine. We've got that for you now.
To be what be. Give me a guitar, see if I can sing a song with you. When you whisper in my ear, you're somewhere far away. I hear you in the sunshine, I hear you in the rain. Each step is broken, treading on its merry way. Let's live life as a dance and let fear drift away.
Maya Caballero with her new single, Hello Sunshine. She was our guest on a recent Kaleidoscope show with Juliet Fromholtz. To find out more about all the music programs we offer, visit us at WYSO.org.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the final week of late fall. In the second quarter of the paper white moon. On November 23rd, the sun entered the sign of Sagittarius, and sunset reached to within just a few minutes of its earliest time throughout the country. In the dark, Orion becomes unmistakable now as early winter approaches, and Sirius and Procyon follow him out of the southeast after midnight. Cygnus, the swan of the Northern Cross, the gauge of autumn's progress, is disappearing south. October's Pegasus and Andromeda fall away behind it. It's time to look for markers that track the trajectory of winter and early spring. It's time to find and measure the first tips of snowdrops and crocus that push up through the mulch. It's time to check the pussy willow buds and to see if any have cracked. And check the honeysuckle bushes and note whether any of the berries are left. Finger the seed heads of the New England asters to see if all the seeds are gone. to kick the plump Osage fruits to understand how they're doing. They are chartreuse green when they tumble down in October and November. They turn yellower and yellower through the fall, and they start to get mushy in the middle of winter, and then they fall apart in spring. And find the plants that keep their green through the coldest times. The hellebores, the creeping charlie, the chickweed and pachysandra, garlic mustard, mullein, sweet rocket, and sweet williams. And be reassured by their deep color and hardiness that all will be well. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the first week of early winter. In the meantime, if you take a close inventory of things now, you'll be able to follow time not only on your calendar, but on the calendar of the world itself. Poor Will's Almanac for 2018 is now available. Order yours from Amazon, or for an autographed copy, order from poorwillsalmanac.com. That's almanac with a K.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at wyso.org.
That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up next on WISO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.
Are you current? Are you with it? Are you at the front of the line of what is? The leading edge of now, holding the reins of what will be? Do you get it? Are you up for it? Down with it? In the news? On the beat? You can be. How, you ask? Become a sustaining member of WYSO. Do it now. Not that now. This now. You won't just be recent. You won't just be fresh. Not just up to the minute. You'll be current. You will be what's happening. It is never too late to get up to date. Become a sustaining member of WYSO. Get current. And keep it that way. At WYSO.org.
How do you want to die?
A lot of times we're doing things to people that we wouldn't do to a terrorist.
Let's just keep her alive.
Paralyzing somebody when you put a person on a ventilator.
Turns out when researchers ask doctors that question, the answers they give are very different.
They'll turn to me in the ICU and they say, if you find me like this, kill me. And they're not kidding.
How Doctors Want to Die on the next Radiolab.
Tonight at 11 on 91.3 WYSO.
Hi, I'm Karen Bledsoe, Underwriting Director for WYSO. Did you know that public radio listeners are more likely to buy from a business that they have heard about on public radio? In fact, 85% of listeners said that they have taken action as a result of a public radio underwriting campaign. I can help connect your business to our 70,000 weekly listeners. Learn more by calling me at 769-1390 or at wyso.org.